How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. During my broadcast, I educate you, the public, on genetic and health topics through event coverage, news stories, book movie reviews, and interviews. Guests include genetic counselors, researchers, patient advocates, and professors in the field of genetics. Joining me today is Bibaswan Kaushal. He is a senior bioinformatician at the Lundfield Tannenbaum Research Institute of Mount Sinai Health Systems in Toronto. He has his Master's of Science in Medicine and finishing his PhD in Bioinformatics, Animal Microbiome, and Agriculture from the University of Alberta. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Kira, for having me on the show. It's a real pleasure.
Yeah, I'm really excited. We're going to discuss what the microbiome is and how bioinformatics has helped us to kind of advance research in the field and kind of get to the point we are today and shooting us into the future with research. So thinking about that, I guess we have to define what the microbiome actually is. So how do we describe the microbiome?
So I think the word microbiome, if you like separate it by syllable, is micro and biome. And it means that the word biome actually means the community. So it's the microbial community or the small organism community that's present in a particular environment. And I would say that the word was first, I think, coined by Nobel laureate Joshua Lederberg in 2001. However, before that, Handelsmann in 1998 coined the term metagenome, which is basically all the genomes present in an environmental sample. And that's where the microbiome word came in. And it's everywhere. So, whenever you look at any environment, it might be soil, it might be, marine water, it might be the human body, it might be an animal body. All the microbes present in that particular environment is the microbiome.
And so we have a microbiome living within us as humans, which kind of blows my mind.
Yes, absolutely.
How many microbes do we actually have living in us?
It's in trillions, actually.
So trillions?
Absolutely. Yes. So before 2016, the knowledge that we had showed us that the ratio of the microbial cells to the human cells is 100 is to 1. But however, last year there was some new research came out and it showed that actually it's not that bad. We have almost a one is to one ratio with human cells. So it's like 38 trillion microbial cells living in the human body, whereas we just have 30 trillion human cells. So it's a huge number. And these are just bacterial numbers that I'm talking. Now the microbiome, it has fungi and archaea. All the other microbes like viruses as well, and they add up to an even bigger number.
So it's not just bacteria that we hear about when we see like yogurt commercials for like, oh, it's good bacteria and you want this and everything. Like, it's more than just bacteria. You're talking about fungus and other different groups.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the most prominent groups are actually the archaea. And they are, they were initially in the same phylogenetic tree or in the same tree of life as bacteria, but then they were separated out because they were quite different from what bacteria are. And they, though their numbers are much less than bacteria, they also have a significant effect to the human body. And they are not as much talked about as bacteria, but it's not just bacteria that lives within us. There's other microorganisms as well.
So that's something I'm learning right now. I didn't know that before this show. So
yeah, a lot of people actually tend to sort of disregard the fact that microbes are not just bacteria. And a lot of commercials or, news articles I see tend to forget about the fact that there's other microbes, like even viruses, living inside our body.
And with these microbes, not just bacteria now, a lot of them help us, right? They're not all bad.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I would tend to stay away from the debate by calling it good and bad bacteria, because technically speaking, the bacteria that lives within us are all good for us. It's about maintaining the balance that, you know, tends to disrupt the normal microbiome or a healthy microbiome and causes disease. So it's not like there's a good bacteria and a bad bacteria. The bad microbes are always the pathogens, which are, which we get from the outside in the environment, like, you know, viruses and bacteria that causes disease.
So there's different kind of types of microbes, and what kind of matters more is the levels of those microbes in our system and not necessarily which microbes we have. Am I getting that right?
Absolutely.
And how new is this field? You mentioned in 2016 that things kind of changed, but when did we actually establish this as a field of science?
I think it dates back to a long... as a microbiome, as a field, is very new, probably been around for the last couple of decades. But it really boomed in the last 10 years or so, when there was much renewed interest in looking at the microbiome of the human body. And with the start of the Human Microbiome Project in 2008, it all went like uphill after that. But before that, there was research going on in the field of microbiome, probably from late 90s, early 2000s. There were significant research going on, and people were mostly focusing at that time on certain environments like this large microbiome. And then there's microbiome in the soil, in the forest ecosystem. But then they thought, like, why not look at human body? And the sampling techniques at that time to retrieve those microbiome from human were very difficult. So at that time, there were a lot of constraints to work on the microbiome, which gradually eased out.
And so what are some of the technologies that we're using that have kind of helped that boom happen to have the microbiome be easier to research and that now more people are doing so?
Yeah. So I think the most, I think there's two factors that led to the boom in the microbiome field. The first factor is obviously the increase in computational techniques and computational power. So right now we have like a small computer at our home, in our hand as smartphones. So that boom in computational progress, and we see about supercomputers and high performance computing like IBM Watson and, several clusters like that, supercomputers that could be used for biological data analysis. And that actually helped a lot to understand or use bioinformatics, use computational power to understand the biology of this microbiome field. Another thing that obviously assisted it was the advent of next generation sequencing. So when we talk about microbiome, these are like millions and trillions of microbes living in particular environments. So we have to sequence them to know what their DNA code is. And they are just, four-letter codes of ATGC repeated in tandem what we get in a genome, but they are much more complicated than a normal human genome would give you.
So I'm curious of how it's more complex than maybe a human genome. How do you look at the different genomes, and how do you separate the different types of microbes and be like, all right, this is one type and I'm going to sequence the genome of this one, and now here's another type, because it's all kind of mixed within us.
Exactly. So see, the complexity is like when we talk about the human genome, there's only 19,000, 20,000 genes that are present in one human genome. But when we talk about the microbiome, the Human Microbiome Project has showed us that there's almost 3.3 million genes that are present in the microbiome, which are separate from the human genome. So the complexity obviously is like 400, 500 times more. Another thing is like, consider a multicultural city as big as Toronto, right? And then, if you look at the human genome, you're looking at one particular individual. But if you want to identify cultural groups amongst them, you want to isolate the Italians, the Indians, the Japanese, the Chinese from that population, then that becomes complex. And that's what we are doing in the field of microbiome. We are getting a sample which is completely mixed with different bacterial species, different archaeal species in there, and we are trying to isolate them by the groups that they belong to.
And this must be a really hard process because these are all microbes, aka they're very, very small.
Yes, they are, but their genetic codes are different. Like, you know, humans, we differ based on where you are from. Even if there's a mixed sample of human population, if you see their genetic code, you'll be able to see where their ancestors have been from, where are they coming from. So those differences exist in the microbial field as well. Like two groups of bacteria or two groups of archaea are different from each other. And there's sophisticated techniques, especially using bioinformatics. We can isolate those species from the microbial samples.
And so really looking at those differences, what helps establish what species you have in there in terms of the microbes. Now, how different are they? Because, you know, when you're looking at humans, most of our DNA is the same. The two of us have very similar DNA. It's those small differences that make us different. So do a lot of these microbes also share a lot of DNA?
Yes, absolutely. They do share a lot of DNA, but it depends on what level of classification you are looking. At the end of the day, humans are the same species. But in microbes, there's different genera of bacteria. There's different phylum, which is like for us, we all come from mammalia, which is the sort of the biggest cluster, or the animalia, which is the biggest cluster of animals to get all the animals together. But then it's like, you know, a cattle is very different from human, is very different from a dog, is very different from a pig. And so that's the same thing that happens in microbes. In the overall structure, they are all bacteria because they share some similarities in the DNA. But there might be even the complexity is that even in a certain E. coli species, they have like 40 to 50% difference in their genetic structure. So it's, difficult to isolate them. But, you know, there are obviously techniques that we can use, and with very high accuracy, we can say that these are different strains or different species of bacteria. But at least until the last 2-3 years, it was possible to only look at the phylum and the genera level to say, like, these are the overall groups that they can be divided into.
So we're getting more specific as we go and more able to break things down and look at more details. Is this really what the Human Microbiome Project is doing, or are they kind of doing more than this?
Oh, they are doing definitely way more than this, actually. So in the first phase of the Human Microbiome Project, which went from 2008 to 2013, it was mostly looking at what are the microbes that are present. And there's like two different questions that they were trying to answer. And any microbiome research, when we do it, there's two different questions we answer: who are there and what are they doing? So the first thing is identifying who they are. And they were able to isolate almost 1,000 to 1,500 bacterial species that are present and with high numbers. And, they also could tell, like, what are these bacteria doing in the specific human locations. And when we talk about the human microbiome, it's not only about the gut, because when we look at commercials and stuff, we always hear how to improve your gut health using the microbiome. But there's microbiome all over the human body. There's microbiome of the skin. There's microbiome in the saliva or in the mouth. There's microbiome of the teeth. There's a separate microbiome in, different portions of the gut, like the colon has a different microbiome, slightly different from what we have in the gut. So, and the numbers are very high in the colon as well. So different locations in the human body has different microbiome. And that's what the Human Microbiome Project wanted to capture and tell us what these microbiome are doing. But in the next phase, and you know, this fun fact I should tell here, that when the first human microbiome project started, it was almost like to get that amount of microbial information, there was like millions and of dollars invested just to look at the human microbiome. Now, with the advent of or the advancement of new next generation sequencing technologies, this cost is getting lower and lower, and that's why it's boosted the human microbiome project phase two, where they'll be specifically looking at diseased individuals, people having inflammatory bowel disease or Crohn's disease, and obesity, diabetes type 2, and linking them back to the microbiome. Because, current research has already showed that these diseases have a profound effect on the microbiome and vice versa.
Oftentimes when we're looking at, disease and how it works, we want to look at a healthy version of that to see the differences between them. What is considered a healthy microbiome? Is there even a healthy microbiome? Have we figured it out, or is there just so much variation that it's really hard to pinpoint?
No, actually, there is a healthy microbiome. Now, again, this is a sort of a debatable question. There's a lot of this division in the thought process of researchers of answering these questions. Some people say that there's no specific healthy microbiome, but obviously what most researchers have agreed on to, that there is a core group of microbes that are present across a healthy individual. And there are certain microbial species that are shared among individuals, but they are mostly in the genetic level, like microbial genes that are common rather than microbial species. So it might be doing the same function. So the microbiome, obviously, one of the most important thing it does for us is break down the food we eat. That is one of the crucial things that it does for us. And the genes that are responsible for breaking down the feed are obviously there, but they might be coming from a different bacteria from person to person. But the core microbiome is there. It has been found that there's pretty consistent research that there's core microbiome that's residing inside a healthy individual.
So knowing this, what factors actually affect microbiomes? So if you're saying that, being in an environment, things can change your microbiome. It's not concrete like our genomes. Well, as concrete as our genomes, I suppose.
Yeah.
So what are some of these factors that actually affect our microbiomes?
See, there's a number of factors, actually. You can't really pinpoint one specific factor that affects the microbiome. And that's why it's so much variable, I think. One of the primary factors is obviously diet. And it has been shown not only in humans, but even in other species, especially ruminant species like goat and cattle, it has been shown there that diet has a profound effect in shaping the microbiome of a human being. But there's other factors like age. Obviously, genetics plays an important role, and there's recent studies going on looking at the relationship between how the genetics of an individual shapes the microbiome. There's geographic location. So, if you live in a forest environment, your microbiome will be completely different from someone like me living in a metropolitan city. If you live beside the ocean, your microbiome will be different than if you live in a mountain area. So weather, climate, geographic location, these things impact the microbiome as well.
So does that mean that kind of roommates have similar, that even if they're not related, they may have similar microbiomes and families that live together now that they have shared genetics, but is that something that has been correlated?
Yes, absolutely. There's few interesting studies. Actually, one was done using monozygotic and dizygotic twins, and it was seen that even in twins, the microbiome, though it's to a level it's shared, it's not exactly similar. you know, there's groups of microbes that are different between the twins. And one of them turned out to be obese, and another was a lean person. And even between them, they had microbial groups that were different. Now, when you talk about unrelated roommates or family living in the same home, obviously every house has been shown, like even offices, houses, they have shown to have a characteristic microbiome, but it affects more like the skin microbiome rather than the gut microbiome per se. A lot of environmental studies have shown that the environment, you know, surrounding you can actually have an impact on the skin microbiome. People you share your rooms with, they can transfer their skin microbiome to you. But in terms of the gut microbiome, it's much more resistant to change due to those factors.
That would be more related to diet and what you're actually putting in your body.
Yes, absolutely.
So for people that, you know, you're born with a microbiome, obviously. So is that inherited kind of from your mother, or does your microbiome really develop in those first few months of life outside of the womb?
No, it actually gets transferred from the mother. And there's very interesting research showing that, you know, children who are born as a normal delivery rather than having a C-section has a completely different profile of microbiome. And, you know, there's some interesting, it's very interesting to see actually that when a mother is having a normal delivery, the vaginal microbiome of the mother gets transferred over to the children or to the baby who is getting born. However, when there's a C-section, even the skin microbiome of the mother does not match with the skin microbiome of the infant. And it's more so in the environment, the, you know, of the hospital that impacts much more of the skin microbiome. And there's, in, you know, gut microbiome that comes from the placenta. Like the placenta has its own microbiome. And for a long time, we thought that the placenta was a sterile environment, but it was not. And there have been definitive studies that have shown that placenta has its own microbiome and it gets transferred into the baby. And it's very important as well. You know, there's research showing that the microbiome that an infant gets from his or her mother is very important for shaping his life later on. And, you know, the microbiome differences between these infant groups last for many months. And the C-section delivered children, they appear to have a higher risk of diseases like asthma, atopic diseases, and obesity in later life.
So it's interesting to hear that you can really inherit almost, and your microbiome develops from your mother. That kind of really interesting to me that, you know, you inherit much more than just your genetics from your mother.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's something that only your mother can give you. It has nothing to do with the father at all, because the microbiome is completely transferred from the mother to the infant. And when the baby is born, it obviously has, you know, a few good bacteria that it gets from the mother, which helps a baby to grow faster, you know, digest food better. And obviously that microbes do not stay for a long time. They tend to, you know, disappear over months when it reaches like adulthood. But in the initial months or years of a development, a baby needs those microbes. So, you know, there's a, you know, lot of research showing that, you know, obviously normal delivery is the way people should go.
Another question I had was how antibiotics affect the microbiome, because those are medications that essentially kill microbes. So how does that affect, when someone takes antibiotics, their own microbiome?
It affects a lot, actually. You know, when antibiotics are developed, they are not targeting specific bacteria. They usually target a group of bacteria that they try to kill. Now, when you take an antibiotic, what happens in the gut is there's like good bacteria, as you say, or like the healthy microbiome that's already there. And that gets destroyed along with the pathogenic bacteria that gets killed. Now, the process obviously reverses back. Now, a normal human being, they tend to recover the healthy microbiome in their body after the pathogens are gone. But there have been research showing that these also cause the healthy microbiome not to function the way they are supposed to. The normal microbiome actually helps a lot in protecting us from these pathogens. They develop, the immunity that we need. They are one of the most contributing factors to develop the immunity in a human body. And with the use of higher use of antibiotics, this immunity is totally destroyed. So we get more and more reliant on antibiotics. And then these antibiotics, again, it's like a vicious cycle where you take antibiotics, kill your healthy gut microbiome, and go back. Obviously, it's not that you shouldn't use my antibiotics, but antibiotic abuse should be, taken care of. And obviously, there's a huge uproar these days about antibiotic resistance genes and how microbes are, developing their own antibiotic resistance against certain antibiotics. And, antibiotic resistance is killing more people in North America than, many other diseases.
So it's something to really, think about before you take antibiotics, of all of the different repercussions that can happen from taking them. Before we end the show here, I want to hear about what you do in bioinformatics and what your role is.
So currently the research I'm involved in is looking at, different forms of cancer, specifically bladder cancer and colon cancer, as well as sometimes we do work in breast cancer as well. And I'm trying to find out what are the decisive markers that decide which type of cancer there are, and trying to understand have a better idea about the cancer biology. And in the future, obviously I would love to sort of look at the microbiome in the gut and, relate it with cancer, because in colon and cancer specifically, microbiome, since it's mostly infested with bacteria, there have been studies showing that microbes do impact have a role in cancer as well.
That would certainly be a whole nother field and another area to study in cancer. And we're so focused as a society on finding cures for cancer and different treatments. So that would be some really, really cool research.
Well, we will. Yeah, definitely try to do that. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for teaching us about the microbiome. I learned so much today. I had no idea just how much the microbiome affects the body and just how there's so many microbiomes in and on us as humans. So very, very cool stuff. I'm very impressed.
Thanks a lot. It's a pleasure talking to you as well. And, hopefully, people would think differently about the microbiome after hearing this podcast and, try to learn more about the microbiome and get into that.
Definitely. You think about your body a little differently after you think about everything that's happening
absolutely.
With it.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend a couple of books for your listeners. There's one called Brain Maker, and that's definitely a good read for people who are interested in the microbiome field. It's very, good book. And there's another one called I Contain Multitudes of You. I think it's coming out in Canada very soon, but I've read some previews about it. That's definitely a must read as well.
Awesome. We'll include those on the show notes of the website, dnapodcast.com. And if you're interested in kind of playing around with microbiome, there's a really cool website from the University of Utah where you can kind of go in and play around in these simulator kind of labs. And if you want to learn more from Biba Swan, you can go to worldofbiba.wordpress.com. He has some pretty cool science poetry on there, along with other stuff. And on Twitter, at Biba Swan Koshal. And again, the website, dnapodcast.com, has all you need. Twitter, at DNA Podcast, and Instagram, at DNA Radio. That one's a little different. DNA Radio. Thanks for listening, and join me next week to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.